Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing well. A little lull in the sports action this week with the All-Star Game and all the soccer tournaments over, but looking forward to the second half of Orioles baseball and training camp right around the corner.
Sure. Yeah, both exciting here in terms of what can happen, but I wasn't too excited about the Orioles second half until the bottom of the ninth inning and the two Yankee misplays that basically gave the Orioles an enormous game.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely see them. All right. Well, Ravens had some recent roster moves that are among the top concerns. They have a lingering impact potentially, so we'll talk about them individually. Keaton Mitchell and TJ Tampa both sent to the PUP list. Now, let's remind people of what PUP is: physically unable to perform. It extends into the regular season, and if the player does not come off the PUP list, then he has to wait a certain number of weeks into the season. I forget if it's six or eight, but it's six.
I think it's six.
Okay. And then there is when he's activated from the PUP, he gets activated into this limbo-esque status where he can practice for 3 weeks before coming off and joining the roster. When he does so, there is not an IR DTR designation usage. Now, that's key because you only get 80 of those, and the Ravens are very crafty, and those are like gold to them. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to spend those. But the two players who went on, both potentially very significant performers for the Ravens either this year or in 2025, starting with Keaton Mitchell.
Keaton Mitchell, to be expected. I believe it was early September, somewhat gruesome knee injury. I think we all expected he might be able to return to the team the second half of the season, but the first half was probably not in the cards. A little bit of a question mark is how that third running back spot will be filled. Rasheen Ali, most likely, but that's not a guarantee. So, you know, Godspeed to Keaton. Hopefully he's back and breaking those explosive plays off at some point this year coming.
Right. So Henry, Hill, Ali, hopefully will be the thing. The nice thing about having somebody on PUP, and the Ravens have used this very effectively the last few years, is that it gives you a built-in midseason replacement. Now, why is that important? Well, you've probably heard me say on this show before and the other film study podcasts that replacement level declines as the season moves along with attrition on all teams, injuries piling up. The average cornerback you can get, for example, the average running back, the average whatever position, usually offensive line in particular, degrades, and you have a lower quality, a lower pool of talent available at the street level. So having somebody returning from injury at midseason is actually quite valuable to a team, and they'll often like defer return. So TJ Tampa, I'm very excited, hopeful that Mitchell's return will show some sort of flash in 24, and then hopefully back to a very key, significant role in 25. After the great year he had. But TJ Tampa, also very important to the Ravens' 25 plans. They have Humphrey on an expensive deal, and they have Stevens, who they may allow to walk in free agency. And if they were to do both of those, Wiggins has got to play well, and the Ravens have to, I think, have some indication that Tampa is ready to go.
Sure, and I think we were both pretty high on Tampa through the draft process. Mixed reviews from OTAs. Heard he had some good battles with Tez Walker downfield, but I know you also saw some notes from Jonas that was a little step slow. So I was actually intrigued by the possibility of Tampa maybe being utilized as a safety at some point during his rookie campaign. However, when you start training camp on Pup as a rookie, cross training is pretty much out of the question.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that would make that exceedingly difficult at this point. It's something if they had their full time. And it's so important for these rookie wide receivers, corners, and safeties in particular, wide receivers and defensive backs, avoid freaking injuries to soft tissue that get you in this position. I think that's the case with Tampa. Is he suffering through some sort of a hamstring injury? I may be wrong about that. But to put him on PUP is a fairly significant move, but they can take him off before I believe the last roster is set. If he starts the season on PUP, then it's 6 weeks. So they have some time to make changes here.
Yes. PUP, you know, they've utilized that to great effect. The Ravens are, as you mentioned, the master manipulators of roster management.
Yeah. Just give them a game and they love to play it as far as that roster goes. The other big move is one that potentially, you know, could be explosive. And that's Adisa Isaac, the third round draft pick going to NFI. Now, non-football injury, we'll tell you again what that means here, means the injury was sustained somewhere outside of training and before he got to the Ravens. And so that was true of Ajabo, who had actually a combine injury, which does not, that's outside of the draft process. So that was an NFI designation. And Voorhees, who got injured also at the combine in terms of that knee injury. So even though it seems like these are football related, they're not Ravens related football activities. With Ajabo, of course, they used the very white gloves treatment on NFI.
Yes, they did. And they, as you've mentioned many times, burned that year. Can't go backwards now. I was disappointed that Isaac landed on NFI. A little bit of a Dalen Hayes deja vu type of thing. I do hope that he can make an impact this year, but as again, when you're a rookie and you start camp not being able to participate, the expectations for your rookie campaign go way down in my book.
Yeah, even if your rookie campaign is the next year. So, it's certainly a bad situation. I think the Ravens are at a point both in their construction of the roster, the amount of salary they have, they would aggressively use the NFI designation and potentially keep Isaac on it for the whole year. Now, Isaac is supposed to be a hamstring injury. It should, you know, unless it's a very bad one, it shouldn't take, you know, I shouldn't lose the entire season over it. But if he's going to lose a half a season, maybe they figure this is another potential replacement at a very deep position in terms of numbers, not quality.
Yes.
Where we might like a midseason replacement.
Yes. So this may be the avenue for Malik Ham to potentially make the roster. Actually, he was put on PUP I believe. No, he was IRDTR last year.
Yeah.
But he was a player that also received some of these this gamesmanship. So it's going to be interesting to see how he proceeds, but I just hope his career path doesn't go on that Dalen Hayes arc with these injuries mounting or starting. I mean, to have a hamstring that was injured before he was participating in OTAs, it's still lingering this long. That must be reasonably significant.
No, that's it's bad. I mean, I would agree. I think that's it's bad. So hopefully he comes back from that. If we don't want him following specifically the path of David Ajabo. I think our feelings and hopes for David Ajabo would be so much different right now if he hadn't played at all his rookie year. The Ravens still had 4 years with him. He turned in this first year and gotten hurt again, but he had that one sack fumble. And then we'd be looking forward and saying, okay, well, he didn't play the run that well last year, but at least he maybe looks like he has some pass rush juice. Our expectations for him would be in a completely different level.
Sure.
And this is how I kind of feel about Isaac, that if they don't get a complete season out of him, there's a point at which you just have to say it's NFI for the year. And by the way, they can still pay that guy some money. It doesn't count against the cap, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. McFarland is much better at giving me the details of this, but it may be that whatever you pay him does count against the cap, but you have some flexibility in terms of paying him. So either way.
My understanding is the NFI is advantageous to salary cap for the team, which is only fair because, you know, Terrell Suggs, as we remember, tore his Achilles playing basketball in a pickup game. The team shouldn't be on the hook for that money. We were trying to win a championship. So anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole. And move on.
Okay, so now camp is starting, of course, on Sunday. We're recording this on Thursday. It'll be out on Friday. But camp starts on Sunday, and we wanted to talk about the biggest concerns on the eve of training camp, effectively. And I know that you have some macro concerns and some of the personnel concerns, but why don't you start us off?
So personnel, for me, I think it's a strong roster, better position than it was at this point last year, when Eric DaCosta had to go out and get multiple pass rushers and multiple defensive backs in training camp and into the season. The one glaring need to me is the third safety. I believe it is a glaring need, not only because the depth behind the starters is unproven and potentially not up to par for playing the deep half, but also because Kyle Hamilton, as a defensive player of the year candidate, when he's playing nickel, not necessarily so when he's playing the back end. So that, to me, is the big, big concern as far as the roster.
Absolutely. Completely agree. Hamilton is maximized by being close to the line of scrimmage. He is a lethal half-field defender, takes away the strong side of the football field, the best horizontal defender in the NFL. You know, the other thing about it, about not having a second really good two-high safety, and maybe Hamilton could be that guy, he could provide this, it just would be limiting in terms of what he does, is that I think the cornerbacks under the system last year really benefited from starting in two high looks. Now, they gave away some things in run defense, which ended up being a fantastic trade.
Yes.
To do that, but they got away with a really mediocre and unproven group of corners. I mean, Stevens ended up, you know, ascending and being a better player than we expected him to be, but Darby, he's got a long career already, and he's on the back. He's not on the back nine. He's on the back three of his career right now, and you know, he's a guy who had a career year last year, and a truly remarkable year within that defense. I thought Mollett played pretty well. Not great, but not terrible either. And that probably is a little better than we could have expected given his age and whatnot. But Stone was a huge portion of this, having him on the back end, forcing the ball underneath effectively versus some of the less strong arm quarterback. And most notably in the division, I'm talking about Joe Burrow, because he's the guy who is scared to death of two high looks.
Yes. Anecdotally, the best defensive seasons I've seen from the Ravens are when they have two deep safeties that are above average. You can go all the way back to the first championship and so forth. And there was a period there where they missed the playoffs multiple years in a row. And I think a lot of it was because they didn't have that presence on the back end. They kept everything in front and they gave up plays at the end of games that cost them games. I do not believe Ardarius Washington is that player. I know there's a lot of buzz emanating from the the reporters that are employed by the Ravens that he is the safety, and they point to his, you know, first couple games of last year before he got injured, which I agree, he played well as a nickel, not a back end safety. Yeah. So that's the important thing to note there. Fortunately, there are some guys still out there, but that would be the one place I really do think Eric DaCosta needs to address.
Yeah, there are some guys. Daryl Worley from the team last year would be a guy I'd be happy. I've said it many times. Their second set of guys that they're trying to figure out who among Bo Braid, Jordan Tolles, and Sanusi Kane.
Swilling.
Oh, and Swilling. Okay, I think of Swilling as a corner. So he's playing safety now for them? I'll take
a look. OTAs he was, yep.
Okay, that is really worth noting because Swilling was highly praised for his practice squad play last year. Okay. And this is something Jeremy Lucien was on the show and he talked about Swilling winning a practice squad player of the week or something. I hope I'm not getting anybody in trouble for that, but it's something the Ravens are giving out internally to make their practice squad players know that they're beloved. And that's a nice thing to do, but I think the thing about Washington, he's a decent enough tackler playing at the slot because a lot of his tackles are a short area quickness move forward downhill to take a ball carrier down, usually before a running back makes his cut or turns upfield completely. While a wide receiver is in the act of catching the football or is just turning upfield as well. Those things, he's a perfectly fine tackle. It's the guy on the back end I'm totally concerned about. It's the receiver catching the ball in stride. It's the running back who has a full head of steam and is looking for that. He's not looking to necessarily hit him, but he's looking to either hit him or slip him in level two. And you really have it's not a good situation for Ardarius. And I respect Ryan Mink. I like his coverage. I like a lot of the stuff he does with the film during the year, but I don't see that as a realistic possibility at all at Splitfield.
Yeah. Ryan's a great guy. He has a type and they are low drafted or undrafted players at positions of need. James Proche, Pepe Williams, and Ardarius Washington seem to be his three favorite players from the last couple of years. And that's probably, what needs to happen from somebody in his position. But I do not want to see Ardarius Washington trying to tackle Jamar Chase or George Pickens in the open field as the last man preventing them from scoring a touchdown. That is a recipe for big time defensive pass defense regression, I believe.
Yeah, Nick Chubb, Njoku, whoever the Browns had as a backup this last year, I can't remember the name, but he had a pretty effective heavy running style against the Ravens. I don't want to see any of that. And
The Steelers backs are pretty strong too.
Yeah, good point. Did.
Jalen Warren, yeah, for sure, and Najee, yep.
All right, let me move on to another one of my concerns right now, and that is one that I don't see anybody else talking about, but my biggest concern probably remaining is that Henry gets old all of a sudden. He's a guy who's been in decline in Tennessee for the last three seasons. He had a 46% success rate in those years combined. By comparison, the 2023 Ravens running backs had a 54% success rate, and Gus Edwards is the NFL career record holder at 57.4%. That is the NFL all-time career record. And they've only been keeping this information for 30 years now because they can't go back and get the down and distance paired up with the play result. Apparently isn't there before that, but Pro Football Reference has it. It uses the old Football Outsiders definition of success on an individual play. And you see, the Ravens have been amazingly successful in the Lamar Jackson era with this. So hopefully Henry's will take a step forward. I basically think if he's healthy the whole year, he's going to work out fine. The fear of Henry, even if Henry is a 4.3 yard per carry back, and he should be better than that in the Ravens offense, or even if the Ravens have an offensive line that play year that isn't good, and he's at 4.0, but the Ravens are getting some good play action off it, I can live with that. But you know, the chance of him getting hurt is probably a little higher in this offense, not necessarily because of workload, but because of the offensive line being new there. Your thoughts?
I think that's a very valid concern. You know, also, how is he going to mesh into the option game? You know, everybody says, I could run any style, and everybody says that, but everybody says everything positive this time of year. You never know. I was going to make another concern about just sort of positional value, and I know that's sort of my constant drumbeat, so I decided not to. But I think it is potential that this Ravens offense, rushing game has been so effective since Lamar Jackson was inserted from the very moment, essentially regardless of whoever was there next to him. And I don't necessarily even want a back that draws more attention and brings the safeties down into the box, because that could end up suffocating the spacing for the tight ends in a way. So I think that's a very valid concern, the Derrick Henry. Yep.
I have the opposite feeling about what it does to the tight ends. I think you have a tight end in line, you have a tight end flex, you're going to have really good play action opportunities. If it doesn't force additional read steps from those linebackers, that basically freezes them or has them moving forward towards a potential handoff, or even, you know, figuring out how to cover Jackson on coming out of the mesh point, then I think you've lost from it. If it doesn't do that, it's kind of like if Zay Flowers doesn't peel a safety off, you've lost some of his value if he's just covered one-on-one on a play. But I think Henry will give you that. You make a really good point though about the mesh. We don't know how that'll be. And Henry may not be a loose cage guy like Mark Ingram was to come and hold the football and allow it to be pulled very late, which is what Lamar likes to do. It could very well be a different running style. We've even seen on Zay Flowers on the touchdown run he had against the Chargers this last year, did a couple of things wrong on the play. But one of the things he did is he just yanked the ball completely out of Lamar's arms. It wasn't a mesh play. It didn't become a mesh play at all. It became a rip play by Flowers. Right. And then fortunately he got to the edge and he got free and got a first down. Then he should have gone down, but he scored a touchdown. Then he gave the Chargers another chance. So it was what it was. But I'm a little concerned about Henry getting old.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the rushing game, whether it's even Henry misses a few games, I think they'll be fine. But are you going to get your money's worth out of that contract with the salary cap situation that we've went over last week? Remains to be seen. You know, he's a 10th highest paid running back in the league at 30 years old. So that's a notable contract.
So if you were right now, if you could reverse this decision and have Clowney instead of Henry, and there was a few differences in there's a few dollars of difference in contract there. I think it was 20 million versus 16 for 2 years. Yes. So if you could have Clowney instead, would you rather have him?
1,000%. I said it before the signing. I said it after the signing. I'll say it now. But that's neither here nor there. This is the team that the Ravens have assembled. We're going to root for them. But I do think that Derrick Henry, he's getting a lot of press this week as far as he may be the most impactful addition to any team. And he very may well be. But I was hoping for, players that are going to create space and make plays in space. And there's a chance that kind of backfires in this situation.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and we'll see how that plays out. Lamar has not done as well as you would hope with 8-man boxes, because some of it is you do take away some run from him, but you gotta find passing concepts that beat it, and that if that isn't the focus of Monken's offseason, I don't know what is wasting his time on, because that's got to be the focus. There is how do you beat the absolute guarantee you're going to get is heavier boxes against this team, and hopefully you'll figure it out.
That one, and I'll add on route combinations and spacing, passing out of 12 personnel. I think that's probably the other big thing that he's working on in the laboratory right now. But if you're ready to move on to my next one,
yep,
this is a macro level concern, and I know it dovetails into two of your concerns, but I'll just say from a phase perspective, pass defense regression. So the Ravens had one of the very best, if not the best, pass defense in the league last year. I believe Clowney was a significant loss and will be seen as a significant loss during the season unless David Ojabo steps up. And I think the other factor to that is Zach Gore, first-time play caller. I think it's wishful thinking to believe he can replicate the pressure, the disguised coverages, the deceptive pressures that Mike McDonald had. He was, you know, seen as a wizard last year. To have a first-time play caller now coming in, and he's going to be able to do all the same thing in addition to the play sequencing, which I think is something that you really have to just learn as you go. You have to have the experience to be able to do that.
Sequencing, you mean like how on consecutive plays that right. you expect to be pass plays that they might rotate coverages differently?
Right. How do you set them up first down, second down, third down? Okay. You know, how are you manipulating the quarterback play after play after play? That's something that I think really separates the good coordinators from the great coordinators is the sequencing. And I think it's going to be tough for Zach Gore to replicate that with potentially lesser talent at both outside linebacker and at safety.
Yeah. And it's relying very heavy on the talent at cornerback this year. They didn't have Humphrey. They hopefully will have Stevens for the same game. So they didn't have Humphrey for the whole season. They didn't have a healthy Humphrey for very much of the season at all, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then they've got Nate Wiggins this year. So hopefully Nate Wiggins is a step up from Ronald Darby. He certainly is in terms of expectations of eventual NFL talent. I'm not sure that in his rookie year, he's going to be as good as Darby was last year because Darby was fantastic. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. On the coaching thing, it definitely is on my list of things. All I'll say is Zach Gore was at least here, but then a lot of the other.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes. Anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Ravens. So head to mood.com/Ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code Ravens when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. and instead simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Other people who were probably instrumental in making sure a game plan is installed properly, like Weaver and Denard Wilson, they're not here either. This is not a bad thing. It means the Ravens had tremendous success last year. Their coaches got poached like crazy. It's what happens. Harbaugh will hire new guys. Harbaugh will build a great new team again because he's done it so many times already and been poached so many times. It's just, it's part of the game at this point. And it's I think, you know, or being an internal hire, I think there is a higher chance of him being able to follow McDonald's basic plan than if he were from outside the organization, even if the talent's at a little bit different level. He's going to have to adjust for that. He's going to have to see what's working. You know, there's going to be that. Second half adjustments is a reasonable thing. McDonald was fantastic at it. Not even necessarily second half, just drive to drive adjustments were terrific. Anyway, I don't disagree with it. I think Orr's how Orr uses the weak side linebacker position is something I hope he is not tied to last year's committed nickel or his own committed nickel play when he was the Ravens weak side linebacker.
Completely agree there.
All right.
Yeah, back to the pass rush as well, because you know they, obviously they go hand in hand. I think it's reasonable to project a slight regression from Justin Madubuike, perhaps from Michael Pierce. That may be offset by an improvement or an uptick in production from Travis Jones. But I do think the outside backers, Van Noy, as we touched on last week, it'd be huge. It's going to be hard-pressed to replicate what he did last season, especially with a bigger workload. And you really count on Ojabo in a way. So, yeah.
It has to be one of Ojabo, Isaac, or Tavius Robinson needs to step up into a bigger pass rushing role, or maybe Malik Ham does. Honestly, I'm not so sure the percentage chance of that is that much lower than the others, other than he's going to be the last to get playing time out of the group. It might be one of these situations. Malik Ham, kind of an interesting character because he's a Sam linebacker, so the Ravens are highly incented to keep him around and see what he can do. And hopefully that could work out. They have lots of players by numbers, but of course they got Harrison in there, who's a base package outside linebacker, Sam linebacker, doesn't really rush the passer at all. In fact, most of the pass plays he dropped to coverage last year. So he's not providing you anything specific there. He's a run defender and a coverage guy on other plays. They'll do a good job of keeping whoever they find rested enough to be an effective pass rusher. But this may honestly be another time where the Ravens are going to have to dip into the vet min 31, 32-year-old pass rusher market sometime after the season begins. There's always a few guys out there. It's actually a position where the Ravens have proven they're very adept at finding a guy who's got something left in the tank.
Completely agree there. I would almost put it as more likely than not that they don't. Because if you're losing Clowney and you're also losing Hamilton's ability to blitz from the nickel, you're losing a lot for your pass rush between those two.
They're not giving that up. They're gonna find that solution because it's not an expensive one. I don't think the pass rush solution is not really expensive either. And that's good because they're like very close to the bottom in terms of cap space, as we talked about last week in the entire NFL. So they only have vet min moves is about what they have available to them. Okay, you still got Chuck Smith. You still have that and some ability, hopefully, to get young pass rushers like Isaac, like Robinson, like maybe Travis Jones to take another step forward this year. What would be your over-under on sacks for the Ravens this season? And they had 60 or 61 last year, one of the two.
It was 60 and a half.
No, it can't be.
No, I guess it couldn't be. Right? Yeah, that's true for a team. Sorry, long day. Sorry. Yep. I would put set it at 52.5.
Okay, so I said it like I think 46.5 now is what I'd say.
Oh, it's, wow.
They're gonna take a step back, and I'm not that bothered by it. I you know, it was such an extraordinary year, and if you look at the past years where they had 60, they never had 50 the next year. Okay. They had 56 one year. They certainly didn't have 50 the next year. They had 60 in 2006, and they had a terrible 2007. I don't even remember how many sacks they had. But I'll tell you this: the Ravens played the Steelers in week 7 or 8 of that year. And the co-leader for sacks at some point in that game was a defensive back who had 2. And I'm trying to remember who it was, because I don't think it was Corey Ivey, but I think
I was going to say Corey Ivey. That's the one that popped in my head.
It might actually been, because he got a lot of playing time that year, mm-hmm. but it might also been a dime back who played that year. And Jerome Sapp maybe, or somebody like that. Anyway, I'll have to go back and look mm-hmm. to confirm this, but it was one of these curious situations.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So we're through the pass rush.
One more point on the pass rush. I'm probably a few years ago, there was a debate, pass rush versus coverage. I have stubbornly stuck with coverage, although most of the analytics have started to say that pass rush is maybe slightly more impactful. But if you have better corners, presumably, and maybe Trenton Simpson or whoever's playing weak side is better in coverage than Queen, maybe you give these guys a little bit more time to get home. But we don't necessarily have Geno Stone on the back end getting all those interceptions, takeaways.
Right. I think that's the big key here. And they're going to have to find somebody else. There are a bunch of guys floating around the NFL that are big names that the Ravens really don't want. I know you kind of like Eddie Jackson. Mm-hmm. He's been around. And he was at one point, he was good. But the last 4 years, I think he's averaged 10.0 yards per target allowed. So he's out for me. Justin Simmons. Yeah, Justin Simmons has been at 10 yards and 9 yards the last 2 years. In fact, I think 10.15 or something this last year. That doesn't do it for me. So I'm having a hard time finding that safety, but there are a few guys who, might be a pretty good gamble. And Justin Simmons is going to come probably still with a price tag above that man. Maybe not once the season begins, but he probably will until then. Remember last year it was Van Noy who money was the issue between the Ravens during the offseason. And then during the season, they got him for that man plus a little bit of bonus, I think, right?
It's like $2.5 million, show. And the rumor was he wanted $10 million a year in camp, and then he came all the way down. Apparently he wanted more than Clowney, was the reason why I heard they took Clowney. They wanted Van Noy more than Clowney. But anyway.
Wait for players to drop into your price range. That's another Ravens specialty there. I've got one more, and it's the biggest concern for me entering camp, and that's the offensive line. 3 new positions, left guard, right guard, right tackle. And I think we may have talked about this on the show, but if not, we'll give our percentages on this. So you got 3 players. You have Voorhees, I think will be the left guard. You have Cleveland, who I believe will be the right guard. And you got a right tackle. You've got, I believe, Rosengarten will have the job at some point during the season, not necessarily to start.
By October.
Right. By October. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yes.
What's
gone?
I'll save this for the end. You go ahead with your points first.
Yes. I definitely agree with you on the offensive line changes. They're going to be inexperienced. It's going to be one of the most inexperienced Ravens offensive lines in recent memory. You essentially have 2 rookies with Voorhees and Rosengarten. And what does Cleveland have? About 5 or 6 starts to his name. It can't be many. And most of them are mop up duty or fill in duty or week 17 where they're resting Zeitler. So they're going to be inexperienced. I think they have the potential to grow into it, but linemen are probably one of the slowest to develop positions, I would say. Yep. And also as a position group are benefit the most from continuity. So, between the two, I think it's a valid concern about the offensive line.
Yeah, both great points. And each of these players has their individual weaknesses we could talk about as well. I mean, Cleveland is 7 career starts, by the way, he's had, which is very disappointing. But I think part of the problem is they really expected Cleveland to be the right guard And they didn't expect necessarily when they drafted him that Zeitler would play out his entire contract, and he did. Okay, so yeah. Zeitler was a very good player for that entire. And they tried him at other places. They tried, you know, him at left guard. He got a little playing time there. They tried him a little bit replacing Zeitler, which they thought, you know, probably correctly so, was a big risk to have him around and be the only guy there. But he just never really got hurt for very long. He did a little bit this last year. And then I think they tried him at right tackle a little bit too, at least in practice and maybe in a game as well, very briefly. Mm-hmm. So it's the kind of thing that the plan they had for Ben Cleveland, accentuated by Ben Cleveland also showing up fat in his second camp, really kind of slowed his development a lot. And I'm still optimistic he's going to be a good player this year because his limited playing time, he was a good player last year.
Yeah, I am as well. I've probably been more optimistic, more bullish on Ben Cleveland than most for the last several years. I think he is potential to be one of the best pass blocking right guards in the league. Maybe not the mobility, but he has the anchor and he has the length to just keep the three techs at bay for the most part and the four eyes. So, it's just the inexperience and the lack of continuity, really. But you wanted to do some percentages?
Well, before we do that, let's talk about the other players just a second. So Voorhees, I got my own set of concerns about him. I think he will learn to pull because everybody who's an average athlete has been able to do it with Dallas Sanders' coaching. So I'm very optimistic about that. I tell you, the thing I'm really not as optimistic about is that he plays at a pad level, given his height, where he can really anchor well. And it's very strange to say because he's an extremely strong player. So you don't associate a player of that extreme strength with having a problem anchoring, but it can be because he's got still a very tall, lean frame. Anybody gets to the body, obviously they're going to, you know, his strength is not going to be as useful as it was, you know, with a stationary bench press and the ability to lift that, you know.
Well, the bench press is a measure of upper body strength, not lower body strength. The lower body strength is how you anchor.
Yeah.
You know, they should do squats. How many times can you squat 375 at the combine or something? 450.
That makes a ton of sense, by the way. Makes a complete ton of sense. I don't know why they wouldn't start doing that. But I think that'll be Voorhees' big challenge. And he was a good pass blocker for the most part at USC. So hopefully that'll work out. And I hope he gets the run blocking components. I actually think he's going to have an easier time assimilating his natural gifts given Dallas Sanders' coaching. So I think that's going to come together fairly quickly. But the pass blocking, I'm always concerned. There's so much going on there with processing and how that helps him pick up stunts and pick up the blitzes as necessary. And it's just there's more talent and processing that goes on with that pass blocking that is more difficult to figure out from what the kid does in college.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
And then we'll come back to the percentages in just a second because I want to talk about Rosengarten for a second.
Sure. You know,
very much a finesse and mirror player. Again, another guy with a tall, lean frame that's not really typical of the Ravens' run blocking schemes. Now, they had Simpson playing left guard last year, who's kind of similar to Voorhees, actually, in fact, being a taller, leaner frame. But they had Moses on the right side, who is not that at all. He's just an enormous man and strength and size and a little bit of a pear-shaped build and whatnot that carries that body lower, carries that weight lower on his body. Rosengarten's anchor is going to be sorely tested, I believe, at the NFL. And I still think the Ravens need to play him sooner. You said by October. I'd really like to see that. I'd like to see him just start the season because they need to figure out if he can move to left tackle in 25. He's one of the options, and that's what they kind of bought themselves by reaching at pick 62 to get him in this draft.
Yes, I would agree. I think you can make a case that Rosengarten is one of the most important players on the roster. How is his individual performance will impact the team as a whole in this upcoming season. But there's also, you know, Ronnie Stanley is not the most durable, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so there's questions pretty much everywhere except for center.
I'm with you. And even at center, the additional responsibilities that are being heaped on Linderbaum with these two new guys, Voorhees and Cleveland playing next to him. And we presume, again, that's going to be the way. If it ends up being Jones taking one of those roles, you know, so be it. But any way you look at it among those three, there isn't anybody who's going to be central to making line calls, shifting, getting this, what Jackson wants to do pre-snap, lined up so that the tap on the fanny comes at exactly the right time, et cetera. Somebody will have that responsibility. But an awful lot of it is going to be on Linderbaum. And, it's like a golf swing. I've never been able to master driving in my life. So it's like there's too many moving parts on my body to do it right.
And, you and me both. My short game's good, but I'm not good off the tee.
Well, I suspect there's a greatly different level here, but also a greatly different amount of time spent on the green too. In any case, hopeful about this group, but let's go back to the question about the percentages. So, what is the chance in each case, those three positions, that we get a better year out of each of them? As we go across, and I've got my numbers down, you can actually see them, but I'd like to hear yours as well.
Yeah, so I will say at left guard, especially considering all of Simpson's penalties and Voorhees' pedigree, I would say probably about 60%.
Okay, so I have it at 65. So we're close in terms of numbers here, and I think that's reasonable. I think again, Voorhees is learning. Hopefully, this is I hope he's one of the really quick assimilators in terms of getting into the Baltimore offense. Okay, so let's move over to right guard. We have Cleveland replacing Zeitler, who made his first Pro Bowl last year.
I thought Zeitler had a heck of a year. I really did. But I also think Cleveland has relatively high upside to be better as his first full season is starting, I would say 35.
Okay. I'm also at 35. And I think that's it's a number I can live with. And I completely agree with your point, by the way, much more upside. Cleveland could be a completely move mountains guy. Zeitler very good on the pivot. So we'll probably see some struggles, I would think, from Cleveland on that. But he certainly has the length and upper body strength to torque opposing players there. So, I'm still hopeful that that will work out. But 35 is a number I can live with. How about Rosengard on the right side replacing Moses, who was really the best of the Ravens tackles last year?
Especially as a run blocker. I think he'll be a I don't know. Rosengard probably has the movement skills to replicate some of what he did in the zone scheme. But as far as pass pro, I'll say 35 again. I'm a little more optimistic on Rosengarten after reading some of the post-draft clippings.
Glad to hear that. I'm saying 15 to 20. One of the things that I went back and looked at extensively after he was drafted was that national championship game. It was an ugly, ugly, ugly game against some very not quite NFL caliber pass rushers. So it's one of these things you expect Michigan to have a bunch of guys like that, but they didn't really, they had a bunch of guys who were drafted like in the seventh round UDFAs. I mean, people wanted, but they're still just not guys that are necessarily going to star in the NFL level. So 15 or 20 would be my number for Rosengarten. I think there's a chance. And, if he surprises us and has a big pass blocking year, and when I say a big pass blocking year, by the way, for a rookie, if he's an average NFL pass blocker as a rookie at right tackle, that would be an enormous step. It would be the kind of thing that if then upon closer examination of what's allowing him to succeed there, whether it's, processing or whether it's really his mirror, I would be really excited about the prospect of him moving to left tackle, even if he could do that. But it is going to be a difficult row.
It shall. Fortunately for all these offensive linemen, they're blocking for Lamar Jackson, who probably does more to benefit his linemen than any other quarterback in the league.
Yeah, good point. Really good point. All right.
So that actually dovetails into my final concern, which is pass offense stagnation. And the offensive line is a major component of that. The other component is the pass catchers. I think losing Odell Beckham Jr. and going to Tez Walker is potentially a downgrade. Beckham did not live up to his contract, but he's still the best receiver, the second best receiver on the team by most metrics, both counting stats and analytical measurements. And I like Tez Walker a lot. I would have been happy with him in the third round, but he's a rookie again. And maybe his skill set as a more of a vertical player rounds out the group better than Beckham did. But I also wouldn't be completely surprised If Nelson Agholor takes a small step back from last year, he's been sort of an every other year kind of player throughout his career, bounced around quite a bit because of that. And just from a macro overall end of season perspective, chasing points through the air has been maybe the Achilles heel of the Ravens during the Lamar Jackson era. And I probably would have liked to see either whether it be the line or the pass catchers, but maybe taking a small step back in both spots could be problematic.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So I don't disagree with you about Beckham, first of all, that he was extremely valuable to the Ravens, even though his counting stats were nothing special. And his yards per target were excellent. He provided another outlet. And Lamar, his biggest single step forward that he took in 2023 was distribution of the football. Mm-hmm. He got it to many more people. He had trust in many more people. And he's got to extend that to Rashad Bateman this year. Bateman needs to be in the inner circle, not, you know, standing outside looking at the circle from about 50 yards away. That's where he seems like he's been his first couple of years. He just doesn't trust him. And a lot of that is going to come down to timing. So if Lamar could make an advantage, take some steps forward in terms of on-schedule play, in terms of really hitting Bateman to take advantage of his route running, which is precise and timing related, Bateman will be his most open when he first breaks free of that corner. And if you don't take advantage of that, then you reduce a lot of the value of Bateman out of that. And of course, some would say you reduce the value of Jackson and his chance to scramble and extend plays and, you know, hit an open receiver deep late. But I think I think the value of Bateman as a timing receiver is too valuable to waste there. I do hope that they have some natural gain from taking Zay Flowers out of the short game this year that they'll take advantage of. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that was half a season of that bullshit last year. Hopefully mm-hmm. that's, you know, one play per game is plenty for yeah. Zay Flowers to run on a gadget basis. The rest of the plays, he should be running some route down the field, trying to get open. And he's deadly, in those in space. So,
well said. Very well said. I think to your point about Bateman as the ISO X receiver, it's timing based for sure. And to Flowers, yes, definitely utilize the skill set to the fullest. Use Deontay Hardy on those gadget plays if you really need to call those gadget plays.
So just tell folks, we have a concern series coming up. We're going to cover some of these and more on individual shows. Sometimes these shows get put up in the wrong order, and Voss ends up discussing these things with me after everybody else has had a chance, and that doesn't really seem fair because, you know, this is a show where we're really talking at a macro level about the team and what the general manager can do and whatnot, and we really appreciate this. But in this case, we're in the right order. So we'll be talking about some of those in the next couple of weeks. Take a look for them, along with camp reports, which we'll start next week. So, Voss, tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I am I am the co-managing editor for Baltimore Beatdown, Baltimore Beatdown blog, on Twitter at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown. And obviously, Friday morning GM on a weekly basis now moving forward.
Yep. Looking forward to that, Voss. Every one of these conversations is a lot of fun. So I really have enjoyed doing this show with you. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. If you want to do a concern, get it there quickly, because these are really intended to be as camp opens and not, as the season opens. But let me know if you have some other analytics type thing, or you want to talk about some specific scheme element or whatnot that you think is missing from the Ravens offense, whatever, that's fine too. Again, DM's always open. I'll get back to you very quickly. Look for those camp reports next week. Voss, I'm sure Baltimore Beatdown is going to have lots of information from camp as well, correct?
Absolutely. Kyle will be there every day.
All right. Outstanding. For Ken McCusick, for Voss Tsirikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.